It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett recently aligned with State Representative Mike Tobash and other legislators who have developed a new way to administer public employee pensions in an effort to save taxpayer money. Mr. Corbett says he supports legislation currently in the House that would create a hybrid pension system for new employees, combining a traditional publicly financed pension with a 401k style plan. The proposal, which would not affect current state and public school employees, faces union opposition, and many Democrats in the legislature have said they will not support it. I'm joined now by phone from Harrisburg by State Representative Mike Tobash. Mr. Tobash, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Mike Tobash, are you there? And we are going to have him on the phone momentarily. Not sure why he apparently cannot hear us. Also joining us here in Studio A is Keystone Research Center economist and executive director Stephen Herzenberg, whose organization opposes this plan. Mr. Herzenberg, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Great to be here, Paul.
Let's start with you. You are opposed to this plan, and one question someone might have is, what's the harm in having a combined pension and 401k approach?
So, can you come here for a second?
I think we just heard Representative Tobash there. Mike Tobash, can you hear us?
So I'm getting notes here.
Hello. He cannot hear us. And so we will attempt to make contact with Representative Tobash to talk about this plan. But in the meantime, I will pose that question once again to you, Steve Herzenberg. What is the harm in having a combined pension and 401k approach?
Well, I mean, the issue is, what is Pennsylvania's pension problem? Because that's got to guide the solution. And the real problem Pennsylvania has is a debt problem, not really a pension problem. We didn't put money into our pensions for 10 or 12 years. We're like 48 out of 50 states in terms of the state and school district contributions over an extended period of time. When it comes to the pensions themselves, we already in 2010, the legislature cut benefits by more than 20% for new employees. So our pensions are now kind of below average in terms of the quality of the benefit. So our problem now is a debt problem, not a pension problem. The problem with the Tobash plan is that it cuts benefits deeply by 40% or more for a lot of people, but it doesn't make significant progress on the debt problem. So that's why it's not the solution.
And why hasn't money been put into the pension? You said it's slid for a number of years.
Yeah. So, I mean, the excuse varied from year to year. Early in the 2000s, the plans were overfunded. So the legislature thought it didn't need to put money in when markets were high. And then there were a series of tough budget years where markets were way down, and you really critically did need to put money in, but they were tough budget years. So the legislature and the Rendell administration between them decided to short the pension funds. So there's plenty of blame to go around across two gubernatorial administrations and a series of legislatures. But that's the bottom line. When you're 48th out of 50th in terms of putting money into your pension plan, it's not a surprise that you have a pension debt. All this time, employees were putting in 7 cents on every dollar of every paycheck into the plans, more than in most states. So, again, we got to address the pension debt kind of directly by putting more money into the pensions. That's the problem. That's got to be the core of the solution.
Was there a legitimate excuse for not putting the money into the pension plans based on, say, for example, the Great Recession, where every state's budget was hurt?
For the most part, no, there wasn't. Pensions are a cost of doing business. I mean, if you have in the public sector, decent pensions are in part compensation for salaries that are much lower than in the private sector, on average sort of 25% or so lower among college-educated employees. So if you want good teachers, if you want great public health nurses, you need a decent pension. And it's a cost of doing business. And so the states that are not in trouble in terms of pension debt are the states that recognize that these are payments that have to be made. You shouldn't short them. You should put in what the pension actuaries say you should put in every single year. So that's the way we need to do business going forward.
And I understand that we do now have Representative Mike Tobash on the line with us. And Representative Tobash, can you hear us?
I can, yes, sir.
Good, good. You. Very good. Let's have you explain how this hybrid pension plan works.
So, okay, we've got a bill that's introduced here. It's actually an amendment to a bill that's been introduced. And what we've really done, just in basic principle, is we've initiated the first defined contribution plan that's mandatory to state employees and school district employees in the Commonwealth within the plan while maintaining some level, but ratcheting back on the defined benefit plan that we currently have in place for those classes of employees. It's a hybrid plan. Characterized as such because it's a mix between defined contribution and, again, maintaining some level of defined benefit. We've kind of limited the defined benefit in two ways. Number one, we've capped it at a salary limit of $50,000. So any salary that's generated above the $50,000 level is subject to the defined contribution portion of the plan. And then also at a limit of 25 years. So after 25 years, you'd be fully earned in the defined benefit portion of the plan. So any salary that accumulates over a 25-year period would be just subject to the defined contribution. We've also added an element of defined contribution from the first dollar of pay for, and again, this is for new employees coming into the Commonwealth, and there would be a 1% deferral that would go into the DC. And then the state would match it with half of a percent. So we established the account early at the higher wages. More income is deferred into the DC plan. And as a result, what we're doing here is maintaining a safety net DB for employees of the Commonwealth. But we're going to stop the practice, hopefully, of at the taxpayer's expense, paying $100,000 or $150,000 guaranteed pension incomes for Commonwealth employees.
Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, I think as the representative knows, the average benefit of both the teachers' pensions in Pennsylvania and the state employees' pensions, the average benefit is $25,000. So that $100,000, $150,000 claim is extraordinarily unusual and has nothing to do with the typical very modest pensions that Pennsylvania workers actually get.
Well, again, I mean that's the reason that we're maintaining that the safety net or the DB at the bottom end. There'll be many classes that are not affected by the change. In other words, we still have the 2-point multiplier for that 25-year period. But the fact of the matter is that the examples, although maybe few and far between, they absolutely exist. And I think it's important that we not burden the taxpayer with the guarantee on high level pensions that for that class of employee. We're asking them to accept more risk, to accept that a little bit more responsibility, to do adequate retirement planning and have that defined contribution element, which again it has benefits. I mean, 401ks are certainly readily available and utilized in the marketplace. They certainly have distinct advantages, but we're asking for some shift within this plan over to a defined contribution model.
As Steve Herzenberg pointed out earlier, Representative Tobash, the state employees on average make less than their counterparts do in private sector jobs, sometimes as much. I believe the figure you used
was 25% lower for college-educated employees.
Yeah. They're accepting a salary to work for the state at a percentage 25% lower for a college-educated employee. And one of the reasons why they're taking that state job is because of, in many cases, the extraordinary benefits, which include what has traditionally been a solid pension. If you reduce that pension, is that something that is fair to the employees because they're taking those jobs, taking a lesser salary because they feel they're going to be compensated by better benefits in the long run?
Well, Paul, you used a word, and I thought it was, it was a word I would just focus on: extraordinary pension benefits. Extraordinary pension benefits, and I might take that word extraordinary and modify it a little bit into unsustainable pension benefits. So, look, this can turn into a into a commentary discussion on compensation. But the fact of the matter is we need to implement realistic and sustainable pension policy moving forward. We can't attract employees with make-believe pension policy. In other words, we can't have a system where we contemplate that some classes of employees defer, and then there's a contribution from the employer of $30, and we expect it to grow to 50, and then we pay 70. I mean, that just doesn't work. And if that's a scenario that we have, we need to correct that scenario. Look, I'm all for fair pay among the different classifications, but to think that we can implement or have a program in place that simply promises something that is unaffordable in the future is some of the mentality that has got us into this situation right now. As a matter of fact, I read an editorial very recently, it started out like this. It said, well, you know, I've got my son who's in Temple Pharmacy School, and had a conversation with this young man. He said, you know, what do you plan to do with your degree? Do you plan to go into a large pharmacy chain, or would you like to do research, or, you know, what's your plans? And the son said to the father that, well, I'm thinking about going into working for the government, using my pharmacy degree to work for the government. And he said, well, why is that? He said, well, someone came to Temple University and told us that, you know, if you work for the state, after X amount of years, you will have this guaranteed income for the rest of your life. And he said, that sounds good to me. I don't want to work for the rest of my life, and I want that guaranteed income. The problem is that guarantee comes at the expense of taxpayers. And if we have got or morphed into a system that government employment is synonymous with not working very long and having a guaranteed benefit for the rest of your life that is unaffordable to the taxpayer, then we got a problem. And I'd submit that we got that problem right now.
Yeah. So, again, I guess I want to make 3 points quickly. One is when we talk about the existing pensions, we need to have a fact-based discussion. Again, the average pension is $25,000. In addition, after the changes made in 2010 for employees hired from 2011 forward, you're talking about somebody, if they're a teacher or a public health nurse, they retire in their early or mid-60s, given their life expectancy. By the time they get to the end of their life, their pension is going to be one-third of their salary because Pennsylvania pensions have zero inflation protection. So these are very modest pensions in exchange for salaries that are below the private sector. The second thing that's critical here is one area where Governor Corbett deserves credit is he has educated folks generally about there is a debt problem here. We've run up a tab because contributions weren't made year after year. We have to deal with that debt. But the third point is that the governor's own plan, and I would say Representative Tobias's plan, are really a case of bait and switch. They make the case for pension changes based on a debt problem and then offer reform, so-called reform proposals that make the problem that don't address the problem significantly or make it worse. Even the governor admitted about a week ago that Representative Tobias's plan doesn't make a lot of progress on the debt. And that's before you get to a series of costs that the representative's plan would have. So when you've got a plan that cuts benefits that are already modest by 40% or more in many cases, and it doesn't make progress on the pension debt, you're 0-2, and you need to go back to the drawing board.
Steve Hertzenberg, what's a better way then for dealing with the debt?
Well, so again, our last pension brief, which spent a lot of time talking through the representative's plan, the end of it had a 6-point framework for reform. And your listeners will be pleased to learn that I'm not going to go through all 6 points. But part of it is it's got to start with revenue. I mean, if you didn't put in money over an extended period, then you've got to put in more money. So whether it's closing corporate tax loopholes or reversing corporate tax cuts we couldn't afford and that cost us $3 to $4 billion a year, or taxing the shale industry, we need more revenue for all of our needs, not just for pensions, for education, for infrastructure, for other essential services. So revenue has to be part of the solution. Can we ask for some additional sacrifices and creative solutions from employees going forward, or even in a negotiated solution from existing employees without violating the constitutional requirements that pensions not be unilaterally cut, perhaps. But that the solution's got to start with revenue, and it's got to be a different process, not jamming the solution down the throats of future workers and their representatives.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. We're talking with Keystone Research Executive Director Steve Herzenberg and State Representative Mike Tobash. If you have a comment or question for them, we are not taking phone calls, but we can take your emails at esspgh@wesa.fm. So again, if you have a question, esspgh@wesa.fm or on Twitter at esspgh, #EPLive. How do you think public employee pensions in Pennsylvania should be administered? What's the best way to go? esspgh@wesa.fm or on Twitter at esspgh, #EPLive. One of the solutions, if cutting pensions is not going to reduce the debt, that the governor has talked about, Representative Tobash, looking at raising taxes, which is something that he said he would not do, but even he is considering that now. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, let me just go back for a minute, because I appreciate the comment that we've got a multi-step process here that needs to be implemented, and that's exactly what we're doing here. You know, we turn this conversation to oftentimes things, and this is what I've heard, the complaints or things what this bill is not. But quite frankly, in the General Assembly, we do not vote for what is not. We vote for what is in front of us. And the plan that we're offering here, it does four basic things, okay? And those four basic things are, number one, it reduces costs. Number two, it develops savings over a period of time, the projection period, and the actuaries have weighed in. Those savings are between $11 and $15 billion, and I would submit that that is meaningful savings. Reduce costs, develop savings. Number three, shift some of the risk, particularly at the higher level, away from the taxpayers of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which we've seen done largely in the private sector. We think it's reasonable. You know, I think it's understandable for most people. This is a simple plan that combines the traditional pension with a 401k type model that many people are familiar with.
And then lastly,
it provides a sustainable and adequate benefit for employees moving forward that is actuarially sound and does not make-believe pension policy. So, you know, when we talk about that, that is what the plan does. Now, there's no question, there's absolutely no question that that we are in situation here where this unfunded liability is causing great stress on the financial picture of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, both today and moving forward. Look, we've been warned by bond rating agencies that our bond ratings may be lowered, continue to be under pressure, and we need to be mindful of that. And the unfunded liability is really at the center of that. So, you know, the idea that we need to take a multi-step approach and we need to focus on the unfunded liability is absolutely the truth, and this is a step in that direction. But the plan
Have you or anyone else considered switching to a 401k style plan completely?
Sure. I mean, there's a bill, as a matter of fact, House Bill 1353, of which this is an amendment to, is a straight DC alternative, a straight defined contribution alternative to the current system. So this is an amendment to that bill. There's been a lot of discussion about that. One of the concerns was some of the actuarial firms had weighed in and said that the transition cost from going from a defined benefit to a straight defined contribution plan would develop closing costs or transition costs, as they characterize them, in the tens of billions of dollars range. So there was some concern about that, and this is an alternative to that. So we've had a lot of discussion about straight defined contribution, and quite frankly, this plan is a shift to defined contribution.
Steve,
do it on a day.
Steve, you have said that your concern is for the employees who are vested in these pension plans. In a perfect world, what do you think would be the best plan going forward?
I mean, our concern is with the taxpayer as well. Again, the existing defined benefit pension plans, one challenge they have is if you underfund them and then get bad financial markets, you can run up a debt. But when you look over the long term, The existing pensions have very high returns, much higher than typical 401k type plans. They also have lower costs because they're pooled, so you don't have to pay as much to the financial firms that manage the savings options in a 401k type plan. So again, from a taxpayer point of view, a 401k type approach actually over the long term doesn't make sense. It hurts taxpayers as well as hurting retirees. So, you know, our concern is absolutely with retirement security being adequate, but also with cost and also with the quality of public services, which is why you want a pension that helps retain your best teachers in the classroom, help retain those folks, mission-driven folks that are holding state agencies together. And so, again, it's on all three of those considerations, retirement security, cost to taxpayers, and the quality of public services, that we think the both the representative's plan and the governor's 401k, straight 401k plan last year don't rate well, which is why we think we need to be more creative and why we've offered the beginnings of a framework ourselves.
You know, I believe strongly in the future of our public education system, and I know that Steve understands that this tremendous debt that we've accumulated here puts our education system you know, very vulnerable to, you know, to a number of different things that I think a lot of people are concerned about. You know, with this balance sheet that we've got right now and this huge amount of debt, we are going to be ill-equipped to replace a lot of valuable teaching positions. We're going to see classrooms continue to increase in size. We're going to see curriculum being cut. It's one of the reasons that I brought this legislation forward, because I think really the future of public education you know, really is teetering on our ability to take care of this. And again, I will not deny that the fact of the matter is we need to continue to focus and work on the unfunded liability. But, you know, when you talk about 401k plans, defined contribution plans, and Paul, you probably have one yourself, you know, they're available in the marketplace. It's, the private sector has largely moved to that, and there's benefits associated with it. And if someone has a 401k account, those accounts are absolutely portable. And today we've got societies that are more, you know, more portable and more transient than they ever were before. So I think a lot of people, investors and people that are planning for their retirement appreciate that. Number two, it's transferable. I mean, unlike that defined benefit plan that we've got right now, you've got a plan that could be transferred to children or grandchildren. So there's benefits to having a 401k. And that's why I think this mix, this balance between a defined contribution and a defined benefit plan, I think, is the one that's good for Pennsylvania moving forward.
Steve Hertzenberger, a quick last comment.
Sure.
We're just about out of time.
Again, we with all due respect, we think the representative's plan doesn't help taxpayers and hurts future retirees a lot. But here's we both agree that we need adequate funding of schools going forward. I think what we need to do now is let's go back to the revenue issue, not just for pensions, but for other needs, public education and others. I think that's the way forward.
All right. And Representative Tobash, I'm going to relay one last question to you, an email question from Ellen in Regent Square, who says, quote, is Mike Tobash receiving health care benefits and will he receive a guaranteed pension for his service as representative? Is he willing to start with himself, and are his colleagues willing to set an example and make the same exact sacrifice that he is asking others to make?
So, that's exactly right. I mean, the point of this plan was non-discriminatory. You saw over periods of time where different classifications, like legislators, got a more generous pension than others. The idea here was non-discriminatory. Every new person who's being employed by the Commonwealth or these school districts would be subject to the same plan, and that's the idea. I think absolutely her point is well taken. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You mentioned, and Mr. Hertzenberger mentioned before, that impairing contracts that currently exist has been problematic. The courts have said that you cannot go back.
But are you not, Representative Tobash?
Let
me jump in. Please. Are you not grandfathered in terms of your pension benefits?
This does not touch the existing benefits of any current employee in the Commonwealth. So this is only for new people starting after this plan is implemented, which, depending on which system you would be in, would be 1/1/15 or 7/1/15 of the next year. So it does not touch existing employee benefits. As a matter of fact, this plan, one of the main goals is to rescue the pension benefits of people that are already in the system. So So to your point, correct. I mean, but everyone would be in the same classification. Every new employee coming in the Commonwealth would be subject to this new design.
State Representative Mike Tobash joining us by phone from Harrisburg. Also with us here in studio, Steve Herzenberg, Keystone Research Center economist and executive director. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, advice on how couples can better manage their money. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.